want to bring in a former New York State Teacher of the Year, the 2018 Teacher of the Year, a fourth grade teacher at the Fred W. Hill School in Brockport. And let me tell you about what we're talking about here. I want to take you to a track at a local elementary school where a so-called ragtag bunch was learning how to run. The goal for these students and their teacher was to run a mile. Now, one of the students, the team captain, had a specific longer-term goal in mind. He wanted to become a police officer, and he knew that being physically fit and being able to run would help him achieve that dream. This student has cerebral palsy. He didn't allow his physical challenges to stand in his way. The student went from inspiring his teacher and his teammates to run a mile to forming a running club that finished a 5K, and that accomplishment was repeated year after year. There is this remarkable picture of him crossing the finish line of his first 5K with his teacher beaming next to him. That teacher is Christopher Albrecht, the 2018 Teacher of the Year. He teaches fourth grade, as we mentioned, and he's also now an author. His new book is called Unconventionally Successful, and it walks the reader through examples from his own classroom and from events throughout history where out-of-the-box thinking has created monumental change. It's an appropriate time, by the way, to emphasize creative thinking because we know teachers, students, and a lot of parents are dealing with trying to be creative and do this learning thing at home. So this hour, Christopher Albrecht is with us. Congratulations on the book Unconventionally Successful. Welcome back. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful, Evan. How are you doing?
Very good. And, you know, in this moment here, I'm just going to ask you briefly, because I want to focus on the book, but I do want to ask you briefly how you are adapting as a teacher, how you think parents are adapting, and how you think students are adapting. Because if there's anything that's sort of unconventional, it's teaching during a pandemic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely shifted a lot of the way we look at education. And, you know, there's some consistency, though. And I'll go back to what's really important in education, and that is communication and the importance of reaching out to families individually. What I've noticed, and, you know, you said, what are your challenges just before we started talking? And the question is, each household, as a teacher, I get a glimpse into each household. And now that we're doing remote learning and we're looking at each other online and we're seeing each other's faces, I'm actually seeing into people's houses. They're seeing into my house. So my house is turned into my classroom. And it's a very strange feeling to have that, you know, happen, I'm sure, for parents, too. And what I've discovered is everybody's circumstance is quite different. Some parents are at home right now getting paid and they're on paid leave. Some people have one parent going into work. Some people are not on paid leave. They're without an income. So I think the biggest thing, and it's really always been there in education, is that personal touch that a teacher or an administrator, or anybody in a school can make, where they reach out specifically to each family and really know their families and understand their challenges and their successes, and then make appropriate decisions on the individual level. When we talk about education, we never, ever, ever can fall in the trap of making global decisions, especially in this, like, a challenging time like right now, because those global decisions in the long run will hurt people. We need to make decisions that are in the best interest of each individual child. So that would be my answer. I don't see a heck of a lot changing. Now, the medium that I'm teaching on, you know, I'm teaching on a laptop out in Brockport and a lot of the surrounding towns. They've given the technology out to the students, the one-to-one devices. We are using those. It's not, I would not say that it's like being at school. It's not even close to being at school. Teaching online, you don't get that interaction. One of my greatest challenges is being able to give feedback on students' work. You know, you get to write on a piece of paper or you're right there to talk to a student, but online it takes a substantial amount of effort to communicate with students and tell them how they're doing. And then again, you have about a 80 to 85% participation rate, and you have a 15% group of kids that, you know, need that to go to school to get that education, and they're not getting pushed at home. And unfortunately, those 15% right now are really in a tight spot because we're not getting participation out of those particular students. So it's a challenge. I do worry a lot about a couple different things. that we do need to continue to think about curriculum and continue to think about what is being learned in the classroom. But more importantly than that is we really need to get creative with our thoughts right now. The fact is we are dealing with an extraordinary circumstance. I think this will in many ways be a defining moment for a lot of us in the history of our lives. And the way we deal with it is all about mindset. I've talked with a lot of people, and I've tried to use this word over and over and over about hope and about how we react to things. And, you know, if we can get into a bad pattern with this, if this drags out, we're going to get into it as a teacher. I worry that, you know, are we going to lose our hope? So kind of shifted to, you asked about how teaching has shifted and all that. And I would say that my teaching has shifted even more to helping students understand hope and understand that you need to get yourself outside. It's a beautiful sunny day out today. And though we have to, you know, take precautions like the governor has requested for us to wear masks but you can go on a walk right now. There's nothing illegal about going on a walk. You can go on a jog right now. And it's so easy just to sit on the computer all day and read things that are negative, or you can push yourself. Hope is something that takes a lot of work. It takes self-discipline. But if you can create an environment, especially as a teacher or a parent, where you're getting into a pattern of creating hope in kids' lives, do it. And, you know, we're doing some neat things. We're teaching during the day. We're holding office hours during the day with the kids. The kids are getting online with us, and that's going pretty well. They're able to submit work online. But we're also doing stuff at night. Tuesdays and Thursdays, we do a pajama party. I'm in my pajamas with a nightcap on.
I'm wearing pajamas all day, every day now. So
that's you know, that's the beauty of radio. You know, I was talking to a friend the other day, and I said, you know, you really don't have to dress up to be on the radio. You can dress any way you want. That's kind of the cool thing about radio. But we're doing a pajama time. Last night, we did a craft. We were looking at, you know, kids nowadays, not as many collect coins. So I said, okay, you know, collect all your quarters you have. And we talked about state quarters and statehood. And then we did an experiment. We've got all week long, we put 2 pennies in salt water, 2 pennies in vinegar, and 2 pennies in fresh water. And we're going to see what colors they change. And next week, we're going to talk about the Statue of Liberty. It also gave me a chance last night to talk about women's suffrage, which right now we're in the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage. And what a shame this pandemic is taking away from something so monumental to this country as 100 years of women's voting. That talk about an inspirational thing and a thing of hope that we really need to remember right now. We used Susan B. Anthony and Sacagawea dollars last night and just talked about suffrage. So I think it's important to continue the curriculum work. We have to keep our kids educated, but at the same time, we need to understand the individual needs of each student, the emotional needs of each student, and try to balance both. Teaching is a balancing act. You're constantly, constantly shifting in teaching, and this is no different. It's just a very large shift. And for us, me being one that's not the greatest person with technology, this is definitely a shift. I've had to learn quite a few things along the way. But, you know, just like I talked about in the book, the beginning of my book, I talk about coming into the age of the internet. I started out teaching in 1995 as a technology teacher in Appalachia and in West Virginia. And when I look back at that, one of my jobs was to network a school and bring them online. The HTML code started in 1989. And by 1995, we were supposed to be teaching programming in school. It was almost as important that school as teaching Spanish. And I look back at that, we really didn't have a clue what we were doing at the time. We were kind of creating the airplane as it was going down the runway, and we made it through that. But we also weren't facing the pressures of income, fear, all those things. So, you know, that's the challenge right now.
Well, I want to bring in Corey Putnam, who's on the line with us. She's a local writer and a mother of 2 students who attend Brockport Central School District, who I think you know, Chris, pretty well. Hi, Corey.
Hi, Evan. Hi, Chris.
Good afternoon.
I do know Chris really well.
Do you want to share your thoughts as a parent to why you think we all can learn from books like Unconventionally Successful and approaches like Mr. Albrecht's?
Absolutely. I was so excited when Chris told me he was thinking about writing a book. He was kind of on the fence, And I encouraged him, please, please write. He has just so much wisdom, and he's an amazing teacher. And it was a real joy to work with him on his book and to read the finished product.
So here we are now trying to, you know, think about all the different people who are helping our kids, their favorite teachers, you know, and Christopher structures the book in a way that asks a lot of really interesting people to describe their favorite teachers. Corey, who's your kids' favorite teachers?
Oh, well, that's an easy one. Chris Albrecht, without a doubt. He was my son Bryce's fourth grade teacher, and he's his favorite teacher of all time. He really, Chris has a way of connecting with each child so individually and on an individual level, reaching out to their creative side, building them up, just really seeing the value in each child. Yeah, that's an easy question.
Well, on page 120, Chris, you write that great teachers fearlessly advocate for their students. It's a theme we've talked about on this program in the past. And when you did these interviews with various people, why did you want to ask about their memories of teachers? What did you think that would illustrate for readers?
Well, you know, when I found out, this goes back quite a ways. Well, first up, I'm gonna throw it right back at Corey before I answer that question. this book doesn't happen without a person that advocated for me, and I was stuck at the time. I was only writing about history. I hadn't interviewed anybody, and then the whole thing happened with the Teacher of the Year, and you meet a lot of people. And my superintendent wanted me to journal this extraordinary year, and I don't like journaling. So I figured the most extraordinary thing I could do as I was meeting these people was to take out a tape recorder and ask them that one question, who's your favorite teacher? So this book started as two books, and it was shot down quite a bit. So at first, because all I was doing was talking about history, I wasn't really talking about classrooms. I was more just talking about success. Mm-hmm. But each person, even as a teacher, if I'm going to be successful, I need to be encouraged, just like a student. And it's not like I can't get by without encouragement. But this book happened because I had a friend in Corey who said, you know, that you've got something here. And one of my most treasured things, I've thrown out a lot of the rough drafts of this book, but the one that I've kept is I call it the ice rink book. Corey Putnam took this book to all of Bryce's hockey games. And she wrote notes in it. But when you ask someone to edit and revise it, they can either rip it apart or they can positively build you up and give you suggestions. And Corey Putnam is, in my mind, a master teacher, because what she did was wrote little notes, really kind notes in there, encouraging me to keep going with this and that. And then eventually we got to a point where, you know, she was very honest about everything. We got to a point where all of a sudden my publisher said, you've got two books here. You've been interviewing people and you've also been researching history. Why don't you put the two together? And we put the two together, and it became this book. And the way I got to these people, it's unbelievable. When as you travel the country, the amount of people that you meet, and really unique people, but one of my most proud interviews is a Rochesterian herself, and that's Abby Wambach. And to hear, so Abby, if you go into the first chapter of the book, Abby credits a lady named Mrs. Sears out in Webster. And, you know, you'd think, here's a lady that Abby Wambach has reached the pinnacle of women's athletics. She's as iconic as any other woman has ever been in the history of sports in soccer. She's a Rochesterian. And she credits her fourth grade teacher and some of the things that her fourth grade teacher did, which taught her how to be a team player. And if you consider that and think, oh my gosh, a fourth grade teacher, not a coach, taught her that. Now, she does credit Coach Bouton for being an outstanding coach at Mercy High School, but also she talks a lot about the leadership she learned from a fourth grade teacher. And this lady went on to become a superstar, and not just a superstar athletically, but a superstar in terms of leadership and philanthropy. She learned it all from her fourth grade teacher, which is really neat. I'm going to throw a question though back Mrs. Putnam. Okay, so here's the question I have. Brady's favorite teacher, who is it?
Oh, my goodness. Brady's favorite teacher would be his paraprofessional, Mrs. Chu. Sarah Chu. She's was his aide for 2 years. And even though she's not technically a teacher, she was a teacher to Brady and is still a teacher.
So, that's
absolutely
awesome.
Yeah.
So when you say still a teacher, they're still in contact after the fact.
Absolutely. She just dropped off a care package for him out on our driveway. She's staying in contact with him, which is really, really wonderful. Yeah.
I was just
thinking about that first draft, Chris, that you mentioned, the first draft of your book that I took to all the ice rinks. And that first draft was very, very different, Evan, than what you have in front of you. Mm-hmm. It was like a history book, and it was very good. It was enjoyable. I learned a lot, but Chris was really holding back at that point in terms of injecting his personal narrative into the book, and I really had to gently, kind of gingerly prod him to write more about himself, because that's where the true gift in this book is.
Well,
is
that's
Chris,
Corey, I think that's humility. That's a desire to not make everything about yourself. And we've tried in the past at times to kind of gently nudge Mr. Albrecht to share a little more sometimes. So who is your favorite teacher, Christopher Albrecht?
My favorite teacher? School teacher or a life teacher?
Let's go school teacher.
School teacher would be Jim Karg. It's two of them. Jim Karg, my fifth grade teacher in Fairport, fifth grade, probably early 80s. And my first grade teacher, Linda Perello. She's no longer alive. My first grade teacher. And the reason being, Mr. Karg, he maintained a relationship with me to this day. And he wasn't like the person that you would warm up to and want to eat a bowl of popcorn on the couch watching a movie with. He was tough. But at the time, I was coming home to a house that wasn't really a great situation. And he just showed me that tough love that I really needed at the time. And he was one of those people that understood that each person, some people need a hug, and other people, need to be spoken to privately, and other people, need a nice little personal note like Corey did with me. So I think why. He's also an educator. He's now in the Syracuse system. He was in Rochester for 43 years. He's been serving public schools. He was the principal of East Rochester High School for a while, and now since moved to Syracuse to be a little closer to his family, and is now teaching in Syracuse schools. So this is a man of, he's literally going to hit a half a century of educating.
Well, and so that story is reflected in some ways in the interviews you do, because every person is telling you their favorite teacher, and everything is different. The common theme is that there is no common theme, that people have different approaches, different reasons. But I think that dovetails with some of the history that you bring to the book, which warns that if we get too comfortable or complacent, we lose the value of unconventional thinking, that there's a danger that exists when sometimes communities, sometimes governments, even companies can get too comfortable in their set ways. So if you were to overhaul the education system, what concerns you about conventional versus unconventional, and how much room teachers have to be unconventional? Is that a fair question?
Yeah, it's a very fair question. I'm gonna defer this to a pretty amazing person himself, which would be Albert Einstein. I think Einstein was quoted as saying that knowledge takes us from point A to point B, and knowledge will get something done, but creativity takes us all around the world. So if I were to overhaul the education system as a whole, I think that we oftentimes get us to the point that we can apply skills, we can understand things, we have knowledge of things, but the education system. I think we need to overhaul society as a whole. I don't think that we spend enough time in our workplace, in our daily lives, creating, synthesizing new ideas, allowing people to explore their dreams and hopes. We have a lot of things that are in the way of those things. And I, as much as I'm not happy about this pandemic, there is a silver lining, and I'm trying to remind myself of that very, very positive message, that a lot of the distractions of life right now are being taken away. The other day, I went for a jog. I tend to jog. One of my favorite jogging trails is to go from Brockport out to Holly and back. It's about a 10-mile run. And in March, April, it's kind of a little colder out. You might see maybe 10 people on the canal path walking, which is it's highly underused. Last week, I was jogging, and I started people counting, and I counted 187 people walking on the canal. Now, what that tells me is this, that when we remove those distractions that seem to have creeped into our lives and have removed hope and removed creativity, we have now, this pandemic that we're under right now, the silver lining is a lot of those distractions have been taken away. Now, in some cases, people have had those replaced with things like no income, and that has to be handled individually. But you have an opportunity right now to also spend time with your children that are home from school. Make the most of it right now. Do it safely. I mean, it's not time to get together and have parties, but take advantage of the simple things in life. I'm amazed at how many kids have mentioned board games lately. And talking with them, how many people are taking nightly walks as a family, which I don't think existed up till a couple weeks ago. Those kind of things are going to recreate our hope. And those families that are, you know, it takes effort. It's not to say that that stuff happens automatically. Hope is something that we have to work at. It's not something that you can just say, yeah, I have hope. No, you have to force yourself sometimes to get up and go on that walk. But man, oh man, in the long run, what it's going to do for us is it's going to rebuild us. When we get by this whole thing and this whole mess is over, we can either be stronger from it or we can be weaker from it. And it's really up to each one of us and how we handle our lives.
Talking to Christopher Albrecht, the book is called Unconventionally Successful, Out-of-the-Box Thoughts and Actions That Led to Extraordinary Outcomes. Where can people get the book, Christopher?
Right now, well, unfortunately, The place I would say immediately is out Liftbridge Bookstore on Brockport.
Yeah, we love Liftbridge.
That's my hometown. That's my hometown. You know what I discovered? I started doing some research and we started looking. You know, there's only a handful of local bookstores available in Brockport, or I mean, Rochester, Buffalo, Syracuse. There's used bookstores, but new bookstores like the one Liftbridge Bookstore in Brockport, they're rare. And they're struggling now with, you know, the online sales and everything else. So I'm going to say Liftbridge Bookstore when it opens. But if you're not in the area, it is on Amazon right now. We put it up there. And for right now, we're going to just leave it on Amazon. You just look up my name, Christopher Albrecht, and Unconventionally Successful. I was pleasantly surprised. We did hit number one bestseller on Amazon for a few days. And it's selling, and what's beautiful about it is the best part of this book, and the most gratifying thing is to have former students, and there's been a lot of them that have written to me and have read the book, and I've talked on the telephone with a number of them about what they think and their thoughts and what, you know, the conversations I've had with former students about the topics that I bring up, and it's been extraordinary. It's actually been a very, very heartwarming experience. Book two is about two-thirds done. So the next one is going to be about living a life of hope and purpose.
See, thanks to Corey. Thanks to Corey, you're never going to stop writing now.
No. You know, you discover something. I found a lot of joy in doing this, and I'm very, very thankful to Corey for just supporting me in this, because she showed me a world that I didn't know existed, and it's bringing a lot of joy into my life.
Well, down to about our last 90 seconds, and here's where I want to kind of close here. I'm thinking about the 10 to 15% of students who you mentioned who aren't really engaging much because you can't see them. We're all learning kind of remotely, and as a fourth grade teacher,
I can't even go to their houses. Yeah.
Right. And so you've said on this program in the past, you've had to sort of be unconventional as a teacher in your approach to making sure you can understand the needs, because every student comes from a different background. They've got different support or not at home. What can be done for the students who might sort of be, to borrow a cliche, falling through the cracks right now because of the pandemic?
What I would say is that we need to continue to try to reach out to them as many ways possible. The very first thing is out of our mouths shouldn't be curriculum, that We don't know the reason behind why those 15% are not participating, and go from there and make appropriate decisions. So our resources right now, we have phones, we have texts, we have the ability to, like Corey said, to leave little gifts in the driveways. I think the very first step, if you ever want somebody to listen to you, is to show kindness and support, and then from there, hopefully they see the light and know that education is really their path to success. So we just have to continue to reach out to those parents. I know I'm so impressed with our administration at the Hill School and teachers. They've been very supportive in asking which students are falling, like you said, falling through the cracks. And they're also supporting us as well. So it doesn't have to be the teacher that reaches out to them. My classroom aide, Mrs. Kennedy, has been phenomenal about reaching out to kids that normally struggle even with school. So.
Well, the book is called Unconventionally Successful by Christopher Albrecht, the 2018 New York State Teacher of the Year. We're all sort of in that role now if you've got kids at home, but we're also grateful for the wonderful teachers in our kids' lives. And Corey Putnam, I know, appreciates that. She's a big reason why Chris is writing. Corey, thanks for taking the time, and I look forward to being able to catch up with you maybe on a less hectic day and maybe even in person sometime. It's going to happen.
Thanks, Stefan. No worries.
Always good to talk to people like Corey and Chris. Christopher Albrecht, teacher at Fred W. Hill School in Brockport. Good luck hanging in there with this, and let's talk again soon.
Thanks, Evan. Chris, have a great day.
Christopher Albrecht. All right, short break. More connections coming up.